plate a potential nugget.
The other distinction I wanted to talk about, Raghu, was the one you bring up between doing and being. And you use a phrase which really stayed with me. You speak about being as a regenerative process, something that heals and nurtures. Can you speak about this and how that manifests?
Yes. See, I was talking to you about the state of shantam. That's available to all of us. When we sleep, deep sleep, we actually get into the state of shantam, except that we're not aware of it. Yeah. That is when, even biologically, that's when your regeneration takes place. Right? That's when healing takes place. Your brain gets reordered and all of this kind of thing happens in deep sleep. Right? That is when you get in touch with your being. Without any external pull or push or any disturbance. Right? So in the Gita, when they talk finally about sannyasa yogam and then Arjuna goes into battle, he is in this state of shantam. He is in the state of quietude inside while being prepared for battle. Right? So he is not depleting his energies. If I'm in the doing mode, I'm using my energies and then I have to come back to be replenished. But if I can be anchored in the being, in the quietness while I'm acting, I don't get depleted. Right? I can maintain intensity for a long period of time. Yeah, I can stay in dhyana for 3 hours like it is recommended. Yeah, and I'm sure if a leader can really be in dhyana on his most interesting and difficult problems, he will get insights from an intelligence much bigger than himself.
And what? How does one get there, Raghu, to ensure that you're operating from a state of being?
See, you have to look at the Mahabharata as a text of yoga. In fact, the first text that discusses ideas of Sankhya and yoga and all that is the Mahabharata. And between stories, between many things, there are lots of key ideas of yoga that are discussed. Okay, in the last discussion between Bhishma and Yudhishthira, a lot of ideas of yoga and all that are discussed. The practice of yoga is the practice of how do you get a mind which is normally external, normally depleting itself, to quieten itself and become capable of dhyana. That's the key aspect of yoga. Right? I think anybody who wants to seriously look at business, use of resources of the world, seriously look at science, has to understand this mind. He has to develop this mind, which means he has to practice some form of yoga and come to this mind, which is capable of this kind of insightful looking at a problem. Otherwise it will become very stressful. Because why do you need a leader? You need a leader to help you take decisions in times which are difficult, which are anxiety provoking. Otherwise, every manager will take his decision. That's what happens mostly. It's only in crisis that you need leadership. At this point of time, if you don't have a person who can absorb that anxiety and be in shantam, be in quietude, and have a mind that can really look at everything and stay in focus, you'll get jerky answers.
Related thought, Raghu.
Even Chanakya says this, by the way. Not just me saying it.
As I was reflecting on this doing versus being, I was wondering, is there an insight here around the kinds of choices people make so that you end up in situations where there's resonance between what you're doing and who you're being? Is there something in that space?
See, when you choose to, engage in business and things like that, I've seen a lot of people for whom their business is their conviction. There is no internal dissonance. between the choices they make in business and the choices that are made as individuals as to what is honorable to do. Right? This internal coherence brings a lot of things with it. Na? It brings the ability to be calm. It brings the ability to be clear. Now, whether you have one battle won or not, you know that you're doing the right thing. Yeah. So these kinds of internal coherence is what leads to being and doing being in harmony. When this internal coherence is not there, you do, I'm sure, because I've talked to many of these leaders, they experience internal dissonance. And they will tell you sooner or later, you know what, I'm doing this, I'm compelled to do this, my heart is somewhere else. So when I talk to many senior leaders, na, I find this, you know, one set of leaders for whom what they're doing comes from conviction. The business they're in, what they're doing comes from conviction. They can deal with failures, they can deal with stress with a much greater degree of internal anchorage and internal coherence than people who don't feel this. So this is being and doing in harmony, whereas where a person's internal conviction is not very strong, they're doing it for the money or they're doing it for something else or position, whatever, right? And they really want to do something else. So in the conversation sooner or later, na, you know, I wish I could be teaching, I wish I could be doing something else. And classically, I'm sure you've experienced it too, this happens around 35, 40. Yeah, people are calling it midlife crisis, and I don't see it as a midlife crisis. You've got into work when you're in your 20s because of so many compulsions, right? And initially, you want to be competent, you want to do this, that, and the other. So you're actually working at that point of time for external reasons. And you know that if you have to succeed, your satisfaction is not as important as how satisfied your boss is with your work. Right? So you're working for recognition, not for meaning. Right? Once that threshold is crossed, yeah, you've got your one car and two houses or whatever it is, then meaning starts becoming much more important than all this, na? Then this doing being stuff starts surfacing, right? And that is called, midlife crisis. It's really that this person knows exactly, at 40, you know what you're capable of, what you're not capable of. At 40, you know the world pretty well.
And you know yourself to some extent as well.
You know yourself quite enough, man. You've done enough things. You've failed. You've succeeded. Yeah, you know your competence. So then you've also got a certain level of stability by that time, right? So then you start asking this question, what should I do for the rest of my life? What will give me meaning for the rest of my life? And if you find that, there will be all this, you know, work-life balance, this being-doing balance, all that will happen if this coherence happens. If this coherence doesn't happen, it'll always be a question.
When I'm working with a leader, an exercise we often do is making a to-be list. We often have a to-do list which speaks about what all we want to get done in a day. But often that doesn't quite address the state we are in when we do those things. I ask the leaders to pick one or two elements in a to-be list. To be generous, to be compassionate, to be thoughtful, to be still, to be mindful, to be kind, to be tolerant, and so on. You get the broad picture. Again, this is not a long list, but a couple of things that you want to bring to your attention time and again as you go through your day. I think there's also something to be said about the kinds of choices we make in our personal and professional life, especially a few years in. This topic is at the sweet spot of the kinds of topics we spend time on in this podcast. I could go on and on here with related insights that have come up at the podcast. If you want to dig in more, you can tune into the curated playlists Navigational Principles and Reinventing Self. You might also like the conversations with guests like Bruce Feiler, Hermania Ibarra, and Linda Grattan. Here's an insight from Lloyd Reeb, who runs the Halftime Institute and helps leaders move from success to significance. He speaks about the notion of each one of us being our own chief life officer.
So the onus is on each of us to think in terms of being chief life officer. If you're going to have to zig and zag and reinvent yourself more than just twice, you know, it used to be you had 20 years of preparation, 30-year career, 30 years of retirement. If you look back even further, the average life expectancy was 48 or 49, just 100 years ago. That was the average life expectancy here in America. So you didn't even have the last 30 years. You basically came to your 50s and you were tired and worn out. You were a manual worker, not a knowledge worker. Your contribution dropped off with your energy dropping off. Today, so many talented, smart people in India, their contribution can continue well into their 80s. And they very many of them have global exposure because India is such a global part of the global supply chain. And so it's true that they're going to have endless opportunities going forward. And the more opportunities you face, the more important it is to know who you are, what you care about, why you do what you do, and to have some metrics along the way, and then to revisit that plan. One of the things that Peter Drucker challenged Bob to do early on was to create a life decades exercise. Mm-hmm. And that was to start with the current decade and define it using a single word or two. Now that takes a little bit of difficult thinking, right? To describe the current decade of your life with a single word or two, and then to go back to the decade prior when you were younger and describe it with a single word or two and how you spent your time, and then go back a decade earlier. Pretty soon you're in your teen years. But the power of the exercise is as you look forward, and you describe the next decade of your life with a single word or two. And then two decades after that, and all the way into your 80s or 90s. And what happens is it starts to provide a trajectory in your mind. And you start to realize that you have agency. You have responsibility to be planning and thinking about the future. So with so many options comes the responsibility to learn both the leadership and the intentionality and the skills to be an effective chief life officer. You can no longer rely on your company to map out your life for you. And chances are, if you come home from your company and you've given it all you've got, and you have nothing creative to give to your spouse or your family or your neighbors or your community, that you'll end up largely disappointed in the second half of your life or the next season of your life.
Personally speaking, when I was an executive search consultant at Egon Zehnder, over time I started feeling a disconnect with having many evaluative and borderline salesy conversations with the people around me. I was deriving energy from conversations where I could be on the candidate's side, helping them resolve the situations they were in. But that's not the primary agenda of a search consultant. After transitioning from the world of poaching to coaching, I'm finding greater resonance between who I am being and what I'm doing. And I feel I can see that play out in the way I show up in some of the other domains of life. Back to what Raghu says, solving for coherence between who you are being and what you're doing is paramount for us, especially as we move towards the later years of our life.